surprise. It's not anywhere in the book. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to That's Not in the Book. I'm your host, Agent X, and I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Please remember that no AA member, including myself or any guest on the show, speak for AA as a whole. The only aim of this podcast is to be helpful. You can get in contact with me, any guests that I have, at thatsnotinthebook@hotmail.com. If you'd like to come in and read the book with me, I absolutely would appreciate it. Also, reach out that way. Guess what? I didn't ask you for an alias. Which we don't need to do a full alias if you don't like. We can do a version of your name.
It doesn't matter. I mean, you know, I'm a believer in what Dr. Bob said, where we're not anonymous inside of AA.
I know, but this isn't going to be inside of AA.
Oh, so call me Captain Crunch.
Do you know in Australia, we don't even have that? We don't have
cereal?
That
cereal. It had to do with me sinking multiple cigarette race boats. They always called me Captain Crunch.
Like, well sober?
While doing nefarious things.
That's like my that's like the pin on my shirt. Hi, I'm Agent X. I do nefarious things. It would be like my introduction to people. Or Agent X, please beware, you know, do not pet. Danger. When you went through your fourth step or your fourth and fifth, were you honestly like shocked at what kind of a bad person you were, or were you fully aware?
No, I was not aware. No,
me
I was
neither.
Absolutely not aware. No idea.
I thought like, sure, I was a good time, but maybe I got you arrested. Like, I mean, it wasn't that bad. We had fun. What about you?
I'll digress a little bit, but I had been engaged about the time I started coming in and out of the rooms. And you know, I was a horrible person. the woman was a great woman. I mean, no blame placed anywhere near her, but she was a hot-headed Sicilian and from a large New England mob family. But she was also a psychiatrist, and she used to scream at me at the top of her lungs that I was the most selfish, self-centered son of a she ever met in her life. And of course, I was aghast at this.
Shocked.
Because of all the things that I had done for her, and I'm bringing this to the fourth step. And, you know, I remember one of the very few things where my sponsor opened the book when I finally got sober, you know, and when he opened the book, because he'd heard me on my high horse, you know, screaming, somebody would say at the meeting topic would have something to do with selfish, self-centered. I'm this, that, and the other, you know, and I'm the least selfish person in the world and her, you know, and then he, you know, because we went through the steps very quickly and we were in inventory the first morning.
One
of the very first things that he did, though, was open the book to the page that says, though our actor might be quite virtuous, generous, loving, careful, that's me. And then it says, on the other hand, he might be egotistical, selfish, self-centered, you know, angry, mean, you know, all those things. And he said, what about these? And I said, well, I mean, when she would say this to me, you know, or when she would say that to me. And he said, Scott, I'm just really curious, you know. He says, what we're going to try to discover here are your motives. And he would say, you know, you get on your high horse and you say, I bought her 4 Louis Vuitton purses and I did this and I did that. Took her rotten kids surfing in Costa Rica and, you know, on and on and on. And he said, you know, he looked right at me, you know, and by that point, of course, my finances were in a wreck and had been for a few years. And he said, so help me understand. You couldn't stand this kid, right? You took him and his buddies surfing in Costa Rica twice.
Nice.
How many Louis Vuitton purses did she have? 4. And magic one. You know, and he say, so you don't think there were any motives in those things?
Truly altruistic. You wanted nothing in return.
Nothing, right? No, I want her I want her, when she's moaning about me with her girlfriends, I want her to say, I want the girlfriends to say, oh, Carrie, he's so good to you. He's such a nice guy. And then I completely bought into that bullshit.
Yeah.
And you know, as it says, we're delusional, we're self-seeking, we're self-centered, we're dishonest, we're all those things. And that was the very first time that I actually saw that I might have some part in this, or at least it opened my mind to the possibility that maybe I wasn't always forthright and honest about the things I said, barely, but I was. And so we got at the end of that first morning, right? Because I've heard you guys swear on some of your podcasts, so you don't care if I swear, right?
No, so, it's my love language.
Yeah. So you know, as he's trying to go through the first two steps with me, and I would buck up, you know, and he says, Scott, he said, let's just keep it simple. He says, so do you have a way to stop drinking on your own? I said, no. So he says, in other words, you're fucked, right? I said, yeah. And he says, so you want to not be open-minded to something that might unfuck?
Yeah.
End of story. He shut me down.
Yeah.
I had no answer. And then we got to step three, and we got on our knees together, and we said it. Now we go to inventory. So the selfish part has been cracked open, you know, so some of that is there. But I also had a huge reading disability. I'm in an alcoholic fog. I have ADD. I'm dyslexic. And guys, some of the guys I'd ask along the way to help me would look at me and say, read the first 164 pages and call me.
Yeah,
that kills an alcoholic like me. At that time, it absolutely is a death sentence. And so I told him that. I said, I don't understand the inventory. Mm-hmm. And he said, what do you mean? And I told him the story. And he looked at me. And later he told me this is the very first time he's ever done it. Now he does it with almost everybody. He reached over and took the big book out of my hands and said, we'll worry about that later. He says, I know what's in the book. And he did. And he says, when we get through the book, when we get through the steps, we'll worry about the book. And that's exactly the way it happened. We sat down, went through the first big book study, me and him and a couple of other guys, one-on-one, sentence by sentence, line by line, interrupted, crosstalk, got to the bottom of what it meant. What were these instructions and directions? And by that time, I'd done them, so I could understand them. And so we get to start the fourth step, and he said to me, just go home and write the resentment column. That's all I want you to do. Just write all the resentments. You know, everybody you're pissed off. Everybody that was mean to you. Everybody that this. Everybody that. He goes down through the list of the hows and the whys. And so I did that. That wasn't hard to do. It's easy to list all the people I'm angry
delightful,
about.
Delightful, actually. Me,
right? Yeah. it was done. And we met at a restaurant a couple of days later when I told him I had it done. I showed up with the notepad. He said, I don't want to see it. I just asked you, did you do it? I said, yes. And he says, okay, go to the second column. And he says, we need to find out why you're mad. He said, so list it. And he says, I don't want no damn storybook about he did this and she did all that and why. And he said, you're just justifying your own bullshit. Now, this guy was 30 years younger than me. He was a Native American. He was a violent man. He had been a cutter. Like, we had nothing in common. Social status, age, nothing. Except for alcohol and also some non-approved conference directed, you know. And he said, okay. He says, I only want one line, two tops.
Yeah, what me happened? Too. Yeah.
That's it, right? End of story. And so I did that. And so then he said, okay. I met him in 2 days again, showed him that I had the list. He didn't want to see it. And he says, okay, we're going to now look at the third column. Because he said, this is when the magic will start to happen, if you know how to be honest here, right? And I would look at the example in the book. She did what? Mr. Jones, Bob this, Susan, Mary. I had no idea what it meant. And I didn't know Bob and Mary, and I didn't work for Bill, and, you know, I didn't work at Company Brown or whatever the hell it said. And he said, I want you to think about how it made you feel and why it made you feel that way. I can tell you a couple of years later, another guy and I looked at some four-step stuff. And he taught me a lot more. And he called it a bowl of fish hooks. But this is the first time I ever did inventory. And so I answered it to the best of my ability, right? It made me feel like crap. I don't understand the reason it makes me feel like crap. And the reason it makes me feel like crap is because I'm worried about what you think of me, what I'm not going to get that I don't have, or what I'm going to lose that I already have. I don't quite understand all of that at this point. I just know that I knew that it didn't make me feel right. And so I did that column. And then much like Abby did with Bill, when it came to the fourth column, some people will argue the semantics, there's no fourth column. It's not on that page. It's not this, that, the other. But it's where we right our harms, right? It's where we start to take ownership of what we did. And I believe the next two pages are the bridge that get me to the point that I'm able to take responsibility for some of my crap. And so we sat down and we did that column together. And I couldn't see that it was selfishness or fear. Not in all of it. In most of it, I couldn't necessarily tie my character defects and shortcomings to those things, right? To see my part. So as he helped me and he started connecting the dots, it was like magic. Like suddenly, for the very first time, I knew that I had caused my own problems. I didn't particularly care for it. It didn't taste very good. On the other side, I was glad because now I have a chance. If I know what's wrong, I have a chance. And so there was this new sort of hope in doing that. Also in doing it, he did something that I still do today. And that is before we get started on this fourth column or this where my harms were list, I don't care what you call it. He says, I'm going to tell you a few things about myself. And he told me some of the most horrid, sordid things he'd ever done on earth. Not after I did my list, before. So now I don't have this fear or this embarrassment. While I'm ashamed, I can now talk about those things. Because he shared with me at the time some pretty horrible things, right? Mm-hmm. We're around for a while and they're just average. They're just normal. But at that point, they were huge to me. And that immediately bonded me with him in a way that I now trusted and looked on him and listened to him in no way I had ever trusted another human being. So the fifth step gets done in the fourth. When you do that fourth column that way, you're doing your fifth step. He's just helping you through it.
So can you move to Australia and start a meeting with me, please? It's very nice here. We have wallabies. We have wombats, too. It's a good selling point.
I'll be in the Philippines soon. It's a sure hop, right?
Yeah, sure hop. So what you said kind of made a tingle in my heart. You said, we'll talk about the book later because I know the book. And the book, you're right. Like, I'm like, you're right. You're absolutely right. I know the book. Yeah. They don't need to know the book. Yeah. So one of my sponsees, the biggest hurdle is after they get through the steps, they don't feel like they can do it. And I actually set them up in a really specific way that they can, but they don't feel confident in doing that. And the way that I described it is I was like, you don't need to teach someone to be a professional rock climber. Like, you need to teach 5-year-olds how to get up one rung. Because you get 0.1% of your recovery the first time you go through the steps. And then for the rest of your life is growth and understanding and effectiveness of the book and understanding and your connection to God. And so I did the steps the exact same way, almost as quickly. I did 1 through 3 in the first day, but 24 days I was through the steps. And someone else, I'm getting them through 1 through 3. I'm getting people through as quickly as possible. Yeah. But it's that fourth column where people say that they're doing it on their own. But if I could see my own shit, I wouldn't have done it in the first place. I need an alcoholic's help for the new perspective that's going to start the spiritual awakening. Absolutely. She did it with me. She did the whole thing with me, which bless her for doing that. I'm not going to do the whole thing with people anymore because I'm lazy. But I don't believe us alcoholic can see their fourth column on their own.
No, they're not able.
We wouldn't do it. We would just know.
And the reality is right. What do we learn very quickly? We're in delusion.
Yes.
You know, not denial. We're in delusion. We can't see the truth from the false. I didn't know I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. I mean, to some level, on some surface level. But not
it says
at that
other
level.
People were more to blame. Like, yeah, yeah, I could be mean and selfish and a little bit of a bitch, but other people are the reason I'm like that.
Yeah, and then I will tell you that later, another person, I've had several sponsees, by the way.
I'm sure you've had a couple. And sponsors.
Right? And there's been a justified, none of them are bad people. I just needed something else, right? So I moved, you know, I wasn't getting, but anyway, that's a whole separate story. So I'm in delusion. I don't have the ability to see these things. Without him, I could have never been able to do that. And then the last thing that I wanted to say, a sponsor a couple of years ago said to me, Scott, if you grade your own paper, you're always going to get an A.
Yes, it says a self-appraisal is insufficient. And there's a reason. It's because that's the part that we need to connect each other to. And it's also the greatest gift bestowed upon me when I get to do the turnaround. You have now given me spiritual permission to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And you didn't give it to your therapist. You would fire that bitch the second she goes, let's look at your issues. You know, like you would. Yep. Let's look at how you set the ball rolling on your relationship with your dad, you know, like you would fire them. So we have spiritual permission to tell the truth to an alcoholic. Are you kidding me? That's the greatest honor could ever be bestowed. You don't let your partner tell you the truth or your kids or your in-laws or your boss. So this spiritual permission is granted for me to help you have a new pair of glasses, a new perspective on why you're so fucking miserable. And what you said is like, I have hope there. If it's me, there's hope. If my dad's the problem, we've got nothing. If your ex-wife is the problem, we have nothing. Just what do? Drink or die.
So
we begin to wake up. At the end of step four, when done properly. And I just have to say one more thing. When you talk about, I've had multiple sponsors. Well, that's one of the things I go off on my Facebook group is people like, you have to do the steps once and never again. And I'm like, dude, you cannot find an AA big book literate person in whole cities. So multiple sponsors over the years have given me multiple perspectives on the big book that I never had.
Yes, exactly.
And sometimes it's like thinking your sponsor knows everything about everything. Bro, I know a lot and I know nothing. So just chill. You know, if you need to get someone after me, go for gold.
Yeah.
So we need these new perspectives. This growth goes the rest of our life. Yeah. And some of these people that have taken me through steps, they'll even say cliches that I hate, but then bring them back around in a way, in a perspective I've never heard before. Like one of them was, she had me write my definition of God. And I go, that's stupid. No, thank you. And then she turned it around on me in a way that I've never, ever, ever, ever heard, which was like, well, obviously that God's not big enough for you. And I was like, you know, obviously you don't trust that God enough. And it was like, oh, well, I could see how at blank many years sober, maybe I still am afraid of God. Maybe I still do have a conception of God that isn't in alignment with my best interest, you know? So even things that I rejected for years in AA, a new sponsor can bring back around in a different way. Because I don't know anyone in AA that just knows everything about AA, that you can be in alignment. And even like the historians that know everything about AA, I don't necessarily like their recovery message. So
No, they don't know how to necessarily transfer the message. They may know the history, which I love and I find fascinating.
Me too.
But I need somebody who opens me up, who guts me. You know, we talked about a friend earlier that we both mutually know.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you something. That woman gutted me on the sex inventory. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I'm 5 years in. Yeah. I had never done a sex inventory the way that she outlined it. Ever. Yeah. And I began to look at things in a way I had never, ever, ever seen before.
Right.
I have a really good story about that if we get a chance to tell, talk about it.
Well, no, I want to know, because that's one of the touch points I always go on, because I do a written sex inventory that is actually, it's based on relationships. Like, you can put your mother-in-law through a sex inventory, but then I hear, you know, all of these people in AA recovered who have never written out a sex inventory. So, like, that's the new sponsor, new step thing. So tell me about that process, because I've heard about her and her sex inventory, but I think that I'm like a grandmaster guru of the sex inventory. So please.
It was just, I remember when she mentioned she was doing the workshop on it. And she's like, you know, you might enjoy it. Why don't you come in? And I'm like, okay, another sex inventory, you know. And in my mind, I'm literally thinking, okay, it's going to be another hour on the sex inventory. I've already done that inventory.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, want to tell you a little bit about that side of the story, has great influence later on my life, especially after and around this same time. And so she and I didn't know it was going to be 6 hours. And then I'm thinking to myself,
6 hours?
I'm like, oh, you're going to sit on a Sunday afternoon for 6 hours and talk on about the sex inventory. You know, and then, of course, as soon as it was over, I'm on the phone calling her, say, did you record that?
Yeah.
Did you record that? And she's like, no, I didn't. You know, and every once in a while, I mean, I love her. We chat. She was my service sponsor for a while. Beautiful. And we got to be pretty good friends. But I remember when she started it out, right? And she, I'll just grab the book if you don't mind.
Please. How many do you have in your room? I have about 9 that I can see. Well,
in this, where I'm sitting right now, I have one that's always by my computer and my phone. I have another one in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're here, there, and everywhere. And they all have writing in them, right? But, so let's go to that page real quick. The ha 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 page, it's on 69.
I know. I go LOL every time.
Yeah. Right. So it says, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish? And then you stop and you start thinking, where was I selfish? Carrie, Barb, May, Jerry, John, you know, whatever it is, you know, and I start writing those names. And then it says, dishonest. Uh-oh, okay. Now there's a whole new list of names, right? And some of them are in the same place. And then it's, or inconsiderate. And here goes another list of names. And there's a pattern that connects many of the names. But there's some that are in one column and are not in another, right? Or after each one of those sentences. And then she says, whom had we hurt? And again, and then who did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy? Oh, there's a fat one, right? Like, I had a sponsee call me literally about an hour ago, and he texts me, I got to talk to you about really, really quick. Okay. Calling, blink. And he says, so this girl I know, we don't have anything going on. He's going through a divorce. He said, we don't have anything going on. We're just friends. We worked in the treatment center business. So you already know that he knows the answer, right? When that, all this.
Yeah, starts. Of course.
And he says, so she's thinking about going through a divorce with her husband. And she wants me to just come talk to her. There's no sex, no nothing. And I said, so where did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Like, you honestly believe that your motives are in the right place, your heart, knowing that very likely these three things will occur. As her husband finds out where she was, or she lies to them, and now you've caused more harm, right? And I wasn't able to see all of that way before this exercise. And so, I start writing all these names down, and then she opened me up even more, because she started talking about herself and some of her personal experiences. Well, she's a woman, I'm a man. I did the exact same things. Right. She would talk about how I would go over and sit on a desk of a guy that's got no chance with me, as she said laughingly, but I flirt with him so he'll do my work. Right. And I'm going, holy crap. Like, I used to appease some women in my office that way because I didn't want to do the work. And I'd go sit and smile at them and have fun with them and tease them because I really wanted them to do my reports. I didn't want to get on the computer and answer my emails. And I'm like, oh, shit, I used that one, right? I used her, you know, and I never looked at it that way. You know, what things did I maybe do to her internally that I'd never considered? My first sex inventory was all the women I'd been with. Right? You know, I mean, that was it. And I remember that same guy who's a great man and a great sponsor, but I'm a couple of days in at this point. And I showed up with this list of pages with all the names. And he's like, what's this crap? Right. He tried to share with me that it wasn't, I wasn't not really looking at the same thing, but I think he knew maybe at that point, he better come back to it later and move on. Right. He's not trying to bog me down because I love this man. And I really believe he's one of the best men that have ever been in my life. I really, truly believe that. He's great. He's somebody I would 10 step with anytime, but I didn't see any of this. Mm. And so what he did to me at that point, right, was he said, put on there who you would like for a mate. What qualities in them would you would like, right? And then he basically said to me, well, this is what you want, right? This is the qualities you want, right? Is she college educated? Is she smart? Is she blonde? Is she brunette? Is she in AA? Is she not in AA? Is she been through the steps? Is she not? And right, all that stuff, right? And so he said, that's what you need to be, if that's what you want. And that was the closest time I think I ever thought I'm not looking at a relationship the right way. And so I began to try to grow, to try to be that person as God instructs us to do, right? Try to get an image that we can grow towards. And I'm trying to remember the exact language, but it says, says whatever the ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. And he used the other person to get me to have some of those ideals. But I had never, ever considered the ones I lied to. I got to lie to, you know, like the time I would get on an airplane and swear I wasn't going to drink because I'm flying from Tampa, Florida to Los Angeles. I got like a 5-hour flight ahead of me, right? And I leave early. And then the thought that crosses my mind is that I'll just have a couple and then I can sleep. And when I get there, I'll be okay. And I'm so drunk, I can't get off the plane. And I have to tell a lie to the people that I'm supposed to meet with that I'm sick and I'll see them tomorrow. And she has to tell that lie for me. I never looked at any of those things.
So that's really interesting. That's absolutely not the way that I do it. But I like, I like the term, you know, anything that can make us see a different perspective. And I do like yes. it because it says we have to ask God to mold our ideals of a yes. sane and sound future sex life. So if we're molding right. ideals about who someone else should be, but then looking at like, oh, how are you aligning up to that ideal mate? Because yes. like I tell people, like attracts like. So you're going to be attracting wherever you're at. And if it doesn't yeah. tell anyone to be the arbitrator. So like you don't need to stay yep. single for a year, but maybe get through like your relationship inventory to see who you really are attracting. Because if I'm down yep. here in the gutter drinking myself to death, thinking that I deserve some emotionally stable, spiritually stable, financially wealthy mate, I mean, the delusion yeah. is strong with us, isn't
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah.
So although, you went through, go ahead.
Okay, no, I'm sorry. Although the book doesn't say a year anywhere, right?
No, it does not say that. That's kind of
modern vernacular, right? And today people take a year, 2 years to go through the steps. And those days they're through them like that.
Of course. And so I really align everyone in my spiritual fellowship went through the steps really quickly because that's just it. For some reason, something yeah. happens to those of us who do the process the way intended, I believe, that it's yeah. just a different experience. It's that fire that gets lit from desperation that will yeah. burn out if you take too long. It happens with me right now when I have to do a 10th step during a day and I realize I just yep. fucked up and yep. I know I owe that yep. guy an amend. And I know that I did something terrible because I'm hurting inside. And then yep. if I go even 2 days with like, oh, it's not that bad, they'll be fine. They aren't bringing it up. That fire yeah. will burn out. Yeah. And so yeah. With you, you went through the steps so quickly. And then what happened? Because this is crucial. You go through the steps. You had a spiritual awakening. You made your amends, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yes.
What did you do when you were through the steps?
Some, because I lived all over the country, took a while, but the amends were made, right? And most of them as quickly as I could. Some took a while. But what I did when I went through the steps is at a meeting, my sponsor walked up to me and he said, "Hi, Scott, this is Mike. Mike, this is Scott. He's your sponsor."
Yes.
He did that twice, right? Both of those guys.
I love your sponsor.
I still do the same thing if I can, when I can, right? If it affords the opportunity. I love doing that to somebody. And one guy that I sponsored, the very first guy he gets, it's still sober today. Yeah. And this is 7 years later. And the other guy is like, what he's doing, all this stuff at AA, right? And that guy, you can see the look in his face. He's like, "I don't want to talk to this guy. I don't want to sponsor."
Yeah, the second person I helped is still sober. The second person in like 30 days sober. Second person. I was 30 both days and that lady's still sober.
Yeah, both mind drained. They both got sober, right? Yeah. They both got sober. One of them's a GSR in my home group.
Yeah.
And the reality was, I didn't have anything to do with that because I didn't have a lot to do with it anyway in the beginning.
No.
And the first thing that my sponsor looked at me and he says, "Get over it, Scott. You're not God. You can't get them sober and you can't get them drunk."
Mm-hmm.
They have to do the work. You're just doing what you did.
But then to hammer it home, because this is where we lose everyone. They think that's not the end game of being the sponsor. It is. That is your job. We have a new employer.
Where everybody's bantering it, right? And I mean, you can show so many places in the book where it shows you that it's like the thing I have to do.
Page one, as part of his recovery, he shared the conceptions with other alcoholics, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with others. It's the end of the beginning. So,
Dr. Bob in the second forward. On page whatever it is, XII or XIV, he says it appeared that nothing so much as strenuous work one alcoholic with another could
ensure your immunity.
It says on 101, right, or 3. The first page of working with others, but in it also, I mean, there's so many places. Bill says it a couple of times in his story. And right here, I'll read this real quick.
I was going to say, find it, Captain Crunch.
I got it. It says, Dr. Bob is now speaking, the Akron physician, at the bottom of page XVI in the fourth edition. And the physician had repeatedly tried spiritual means to solve his alcoholic dilemma, but he had failed. But when the broker gave him Dr. Silkworth's description of alcoholism and its hopelessness, the physician began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. He sobered, never to drink again, to the moment of his death in 1950. And this seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another alcoholic as no non-alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery.
Yes.
It just opens. It tells you right there from the get-go. This is what you have to do.
AA is you being the sponsor. For you to recover from alcoholism, you learn the process to help. First, you learn the process to connect to God. And then to stay sober, your only purpose in life from now on is to connect other show people the process to connect to their higher power. That's the whole thing.
I heard Houston say one time about Pritz, he said, when I asked to sponsor me, I came over there and I met with him and he set the rules straight, and then he looked at me and he said, "Look, my job is to get you through this work as quick as I can. I have a family. I have a life. I can't have you dependent on me. I need you dependent on God."
Yeah.
So we're going through this work as quick as we can. Is that okay? Boom. Yes. Okay. Let's get started.
Yeah.
And you know, it's end of story. I heard recently, and I've heard this guy say it a whole bunch of times, and he's a guy filled with big book knowledge. He thinks he's, you know, telling everybody, and he's out there killing people. And he absolutely says this all the time. And I heard it in him say it again in a meeting. Mm-hmm. I've walked up and talked to him about it afterwards in a nice way. We're friends. And I said, why do you say that? I said, and here's what he says. Not everybody's meant to be a sponsor. You know, some of you will do other things. You'll shake hands at the door.
No.
You know, you'll clean ashtrays. You know, no. The old horseshit that they all say. Right? And he's telling them, you don't have to. Don't worry about it if it bothers you. You know?
Sir. And I'm just like, sir, all of this stuff bothers me. That's the point. I'm going to die here. All right? It says there is a solution. None of us liked the self-searching love.
None of us.
There's a solution, but none of us liked it.
It actually says almost none of us, but it should say none.
Let's, you know, come on. Show me someone who's like, ooh, yeah. I'm wrong. Yes. Yeah,
it doesn't happen.
I get to make an amend every day sometimes. Awesome.
Or the guys that will go out there and group these things into living amends. Oh, no.
Oh.
It's a living It's
okay, we're going to talk about it right now because Fonzie came up with it last night and she goes, I don't understand this living amends thing. I'm supposed to just walk around in shame, guilt, and remorse for the rest of my life. And I was like, no, because it says direct amends. And let me just go back because this was so important yesterday. I was a terrible mother, and I mean terrible. There are things that I've done that just break my heart to this day. And I had to make direct amends to my children for these things. And in that moment, for some reason, I've been bestowed grace and forgiveness from my family over and over and over. True love of God from people in my life towards me when I'm able to make these direct amends. And in those direct amends, I have built a step to make a brand new foundation in the relationship with my child that I harmed so badly. They aren't sitting around thinking about it anymore because forgiveness has come into play, and I don't know why they were able to. But now my job is to build a new relationship with this person, not based in my regret and shame and remorse. It's based in coming to them where I am now in a God-conscious life where I can do better and be better and prove that to them. And when I fall short, I then again make a direct amend to build another stepping stone for a better relationship with this human being, a living amend. I also, you got me on a tangent. I also was sponsoring a girl maybe 10 years sober in the program, and her mother was like a big figure in AA. And she, you know, she had a little bit of a meaning maker message, not my thing, but she was incredibly abusive to my sponsee. And now we're not judging her abuse. Me too. Hands up. That's fine. But, you know, my sponsee's in AA, and these were horrific childhood abuses. And she said, my mom just said, oh, well, I'm not going to make an amend to you. I'm just going to show you by making a living amend. And this crushed her, as it should, because there's this whole TikTok generation right now of these 20-year-old white girls who are no contact with their parents, because every time they go to their parents and say, I suffered this as a child, their mom's like, well, I don't remember it that way, or I did the best I could. Now, they're no contact with their parents. They're labeling everyone as narcissistic abusers. It's this whole trend going on where you hate your parents. Got it. Great. Wonderful. My kids have suffered incredible abuse, so they aren't going to make TikToks. They're going to know that people can fail, come back, own their shit, make a direct amend to them, and do better from a new foundation. That is not the same. I did horrible things, and I still do shit. I owed an apology yesterday. I got mad for no reason. Cool. Wonderful. Mom came back around and made a direct amend again. There's no such thing as a living amend. I'm building foundations here. I'm building a house with people. I'm building relationships that stand the test of time. And it's not built on my shame, remorse, and regret.
Yeah. Yeah. I, I saw in there's one group that I love on Facebook, and they post a question, right? They want reaction. They want the interaction. This particular one was on how do I forgive myself, right? But we won't go down that rabbit hole right now because you know all the crazy answers.
Uh-huh.
But I love amends stories, right? Because it's the healing. We see it, we hear it, we hear them in AA. They become possible. My children, I abandoned my two children for 30 years. That was never my intent. But it's what we do, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's what we do. And I was selfish and self-centered to the core. I wanted to live the life I wanted to live. Mm-hmm. And I could blame it on her. Right?
Yes.
Not that I didn't show up in court without a lawyer, arrogant and self-centered. And I think the judge is going to think I'm this great guy and slap my hand and give me this little tiny alimony, right, and support. No, I show up in court like an arrogant little prick, and he slapped me. Mm. Right? He gave me massive. I mean, when I say massive, I mean massive. Massive. It was almost $100,000 for the three of them every year, right? Mm. And this is 30 years ago. And I was making a little more than that. But that doesn't leave me, Scott, any money to do the things he wants to do.
Yeah.
And I come from the world of timeshare development and sales, right? Long before the movie ever came out that said, catch me if you can. Yeah. I said it. And good luck, right? You know, good luck, right? But what happens over 4 or 5 years? Of course, all the people that I know in that period knew what happened, right? And I could blame it on her, and she's a bitch, and the judge a jerk, and this, and this, and this. But even I'm not so stupid that doesn't carry water very long. Mm-hmm. That story holds there's no way to spin that story and make me look good. So I quit telling it. And I move and I go to this resort. Now I'm in Canada, I'm in Mexico, I'm in St. Martin, St. Thomas. And I say, people, you're in the bar. And the people would say, you got kids? Nope.
Nope.
Never had any. Mm-hmm. Never had any. And they'd be like, how is that possible? I don't know. She's black.
Yeah. You know,
No.
Listen, ladies, if he has a lot of money and he says he doesn't have kids, how is that possible? He probably does.
So, you know, that was the way I operated for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I hadn't told anybody other than the people who knew me intimately, like my parents, mm-hmm. right? I would go to their house. They're my parents' only grandchildren. Their only grandchildren, maternal grandchildren. And I robbed them of that. They kept a good relationship with them and my ex-wife, which pissed me off, right? They're rubbing it in my face when they're simply trying to get me to grow up and be a man and take care of them. So we had lots of issues. I say, I know when I come over to their house, they put those pictures on the wall, so I'll see them. They've been hanging there for 20 years, right? And I hardly saw my parents for 20 years because in that industry, I'm moving around, I'm zigging and zagging, and you know, many of those were geographical cures long before I had any idea what they were, but they started right then and there the day I made a decision to not take my own responsibility for my children serious. 30 years of that is inside of me. 30 years.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not a narcissist. I know it's in there, right? And I will tell you again how I described going through the steps. When I got to that first column, I didn't put them there. Not because I didn't know I had harmed them, because I didn't see them as a resentment. They didn't reappear until I got to my amends list. I knew that I owed them in that 8-step list. So I say to him, remember, we're going through this really quickly. And I said to him, well, I got my, what about my kids? And he looks at me and he's like, what kids?
Yeah.
What kids? Now, he'd known me for almost 2 years in the rooms. He never heard me talk about him. He had no idea what I was talking about. He didn't have kids. He's a young single guy. And you know what he said? He said, I don't have any experience with that, but they are a resentment, Scott. Do you mind if I introduce you to my sponsor? And he did that. And that man had a similar experience, not quite as bad as mine, but it was similar. And he walked me through how to make those amends. And I can tell you that for a week, I wrote these long letters. I'm not there. I was, I missed your graduation, you know, blah, 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 blah. And every time I would read it to him, he would just pick them up and rip them in half and hand them back to me. And he said, no, I told you to write it. You tell them that you're, and they needed to be written. They couldn't be seen personally because I can't, and I knew where they lived. I had two friends that lived on the same street, Sarasota, Florida. But I can't go to their door because that's cruel. So they said, you will write letters. You're not there to do more harm. You write letters, you take ownership for it. You ask to see them or ask to be able to call them. And so, you know, I wrote, you know, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to stay sober. It requires me to take responsibility for my actions. This is what I've done to you. Have I left anything out? How did it affect you? You know, and what can I do to set these things right? That's it. You know, no bullshit. Just that's it. That's what's going in this letter. You don't have the right to tell them you miss them and you love them. You don't have that right. And so I did that. And I can tell you, I remember the exact day I did it. It was August the 8th in 2015. And I remember shaking at the mailbox when I dropped them in the mailbox. You know, literally, I got goosebumps right now remembering it. And I remember a couple of months go by and like, I don't hear from them. And remember, I'm pretty early. So, you know, I think I'm March 4th at that point to August, you know, four months, whatever it was, 5 months. And I remember being really like, there's no closure. I'm not hearing anything. And my sponsor would say, well, what do you think? They're just going to call you and roll out the red carpet? And then my mom was going to Sarasota, Florida to visit them. She did that a few times a year. And I warned her, I said, Mom, don't mess with your relationship with them. You know, don't say anything. They knew I'd written the letters and they would always say, did you hear from them? Did you hear from them? Did you hear from them? And my mom could be a little overbearing. And I'm like, don't mess this up for you, right? This is about me and them. My son says to her, he said, you know, I got this letter from my dad. And I thought about calling him, but I didn't know what to say. But you can give him my number. So I literally called him for close to 3 months before he picked up the phone. He finally answers the phone. We talked twice that day for a couple of hours. And, you know, we'd start texting and, you know, he's a texter. He's not a caller. I mean, once in a blue moon, there's a phone call, but mostly it's this. Of course, now what do I think? I think the amends is made.
I've made the amends. No,
right. No, of course not. And then I asked, he was moving to Seattle. He's a programmer. He's moving to Seattle and he was going to be coming right through where I was within 100 miles or so, one way, depending on what interstate he took. So I'm telling him, I'll meet you anywhere. I'll drive here. I'll drive there. I want to see you. And da, 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 da. He goes dark. Well, I don't hear anything for about 45 days. He finally reaches out to me in a text. When he's in Seattle. I'm like, where'd you go? I was going to come. I was looking forward to seeing you. And he makes up this story, right? That, well, Adriana, that's his significant other. Adriana, you know, and she had the plans and I didn't make the plans. Deep down inside, I knew. But I'd already told everybody, I'm going to see my kid and, you know, all the blah, 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 blah. You know, the stage character that we want everybody to see. And I knew, and we spoke for about the next 10 months or so, and Christmas is coming around again. And I said, man, I'm going to fly out and see you. I talked to my sponsor and said, just tell him you really want to come. You'll be there for a week. If he wants to hear for an hour, a day, a week, whatever it is, you're fine with that. You just want to see. And he told me this time, no. As bad as that hurt, I needed to hear that so bad. Because again, I'm living under this delusion that I made my amends. Mm-hmm. So I stepped back. And I mean, honest to God, I have goosebumps from head to toe going through this experience. I still had no communication with my daughter. And he moves back to Florida. He gets a house. He's like a mile from my office. Mm-hmm. I'm going crazy. And my sponsor is saying, let it rest, let it rest, let it rest, let it rest. Out of the blue one morning, I get a text and he says, are you available? Well, of course I am. I'll burn the car down, the house down, the office.
Way. Quit my job, leave my wife. What do you want? Yes.
And he says, well, I've got a problem and it's something you have experience with. Now, I know it's one of two things, alcohol or failed relationships. And I'm pretty sure it's not failed relationships. He's been with the same for 8 years. And it was like a gut punch. And he sends me his address. Because frankly, I'd always thought it was probably my daughter from everything I'd heard. He seemed like he had his shit together, right? Some of us do, sort of. Mm-hmm. And so I get in the car and I'm heading over there and he texts me back and he says, don't come. I turn around and I go back to my office and I go sit down and I pray. I'm praying through all of it. I'm meditating. I'm talking to my sponsor. I'm writing whatever I got to write. I'm doing it all. And the next day he texts me again. And says, can you come now? Mm-hmm. And that was late in the afternoon. And I went immediately over there and he invited me into his house, a nice home, his dog, you know, his wife's at work. And he says, can we go somewhere? Sure. There's a Starbucks right around the corner. Let's go. And we sat outside and it's in monsoon season in Florida, pouring down rain. It's like you can't hardly see through it. And he and I are sitting. We're the only two outside. We're sitting under the umbrella and we sit down and it's friendly. And he looks at me and he says, you know, the minute I got your letter, I knew exactly what was wrong with me. And I sat back and I thought about it for a minute and I did what we do. And I showed him love and compassion and asked him what he would like me to do. And I shared him my story. And he said, will you take me to an AA meeting? And the next day, he and I went to his very first AA meeting together. And when we got there, when I tried to pick him up, he smashed. Mm. Right. And on the way there, right, I don't care. I get it. Right. And on the way there, I'm like, why don't we get some food? Let's try to sober up a little bit, you know, before we get to the meeting. He's like, okay, so we go into a little pizza parlor in a strip center and we go in and he's looking around the restaurant for booze and they don't care. I didn't know that when I pulled in there and he's complaining and he's restless and he's irritable and discontented. And the guy that ran the pizza parlor went to the corner to a bar, or a little liquor store or something. And he brought back like six cans of beer and he's pissed. Because he doesn't like beer. He drinks whiskey right after his old man, whiskey or vodka, right? And he drank those six beers and we went to that meeting. And on the way home, he said, you know, I'm glad it worked for you. I don't think it's for me. Now I can tell you, we have talked many times over the last couple of years. And recently and I never asked him about it ever, right? Because that would destroy any chance in the future. He knows what a big book looks like. He knows what Alcoholics Anonymous looks like. He's seen it, right? I still have no contact with my daughter at this point. And I'm taking my parents down this Christmas before this last one to see them in Sarasota, Florida. And I'm like, Mom, now you have to tell Samantha, Sam, that I'm with you, right? Because if she doesn't want to see me, I'm okay with that. I mean, I would love to see her, but you can't just bushwhack her, right? You can't just blindside her. And so Mom in the car on the way down says, you know, we're with Scott. You know, and she's like, that's fine, right? And they show up, her and her three kids, my grandchildren, come to the condo. And we spent all day together, all day. And laughed. She sat by me. We told stories. We all walked to the beach. We came up. And when she was leaving, I walked her down and the kids, and they got in the car. And I said, Sam, I says, is it okay if I keep in touch with you? I have your phone number. And she said, let me think about it. And I never heard from her. And at that point, my sponsor asked me, he said, so tell me what you're really doing to try to stay in touch with these kids. I send them Christmas cards. I send them birthday cards. I send them money. I send the kids birthday cards and send them money. And he says, so we know the story with your daughter, but how often does your son institute a call or a text you? Well, only two times I can remember those 2 days back to back. Otherwise, it was always me, right? And he said, Mark, speaking of Mark Houston, who was his sponsor, said, Mark said, we don't stalk people. You're forcing your way into their lives. Write another letter. So now I got to write another letter. I tell them I love them. I would love to be part of their life, but I don't want to force my way into their relationship. And that if they would like me to continue talking or staying in touch, here's my phone numbers, my emails, my addresses. My phone number's been the same phone number for 20 years. I'd love it. But you guys need to make that decision, not me. I didn't hear from either one of them. My dad passes away. My dad passes away a month ago to the day. And my mom is a mess. And I know that they need to know. So I thought about it for a second. Do I send a text to my ex-wife who didn't respond to any of my attempts to make an amends? Surprise, imagine that. And so I said, Richie, Sam. So Sam's the one that calls mom all the time. So I send a text to Sam. I say, Sam, this is Scott. I said, not your dad. This is Scott. I said, dad passed away. Your grandpa passed away. And she immediately, and she was rocked. Oh my God, I wish I could be there. And I said, Sam, if you want to come, just tell me. I can make that happen. She says, no, but I'd have to bring my son. And I'm like, I said, if you want to come, just say the word. So now she comes and she gets to spend 5 days with me in the same house. She goes to the funeral, to the viewing. She sees how I'm acting as a human being, that there's love, there's compassion, there's understanding. And we became friends in those 5 days. And we have talked almost every day since. I'm not in control of when someone makes or accepts an amends. My job is to do the best I can to make the amends. And I believe that's what I did. And that's a 7-year amends story.
I wonder, we're almost out of time. I know it goes really fast. I'm so sorry. No, it's a really great story. So I like when he ripped up your letter that was like directly taking accountability for bullet point things. I don't know. I wonder if that should have been in that amend letter.
Not on that side. I will tell you why it was explained to me and why I understood it. It's selfish. It's self-centered. It's me seeking something from them. In the call or the visit face to face, I have the right to say, I know I missed a lot of those things. And I've said that in countless Christmas card scents and, all that right. stuff. But at that time, I'm just trying to get them to allow me to come and make an amends.
Yeah.
I thought I did.
That makes sense. That makes yes. sense then. So open up the book because we literally have 5 minutes. Sure. We're on page 84. This happens every time. I'm like, we'll get to it later. It. But then we like speed read. But it doesn't matter because it's always at the same spot like that we should be. So it's on page 84.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite pages.
So it says, we suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And I think that's kind of just wrapping up kind of your experience is that if you were to have done any of this on your own, we would be incapable, And even the not talking thing, that would have been Captain Crunch's will. Like, yes. Like the way that things are done can no longer be in Agent X's time or will. And that goes back to the step three thing, that that's not like a theory. We have to live that. And yeah. That's probably the hardest part, isn't it? That little, but what if God needs a little bit more of my suggestion or action, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it also says the courage to carry it out, right? So many times we don't have the courage to do God's will, right? You know, I know I need to divorce the woman or leave the girl. I know that. I have all the evidence, right? I'm codependent. So I can't. And I'm stuck in this relationship, right? And it's have the courage to carry it out.
Yeah.
I don't have the courage.
Yeah.
God gives me the courage if I'm accepting that will.
When I owed an amend to a guy in AA, it was a Friday. I said something that was inappropriate and he kind of snapped back at me and I was like, ugh. And then all weekend I sat on it and I felt terrible and I knew I owed him an apology. Monday morning, we're at the meeting. I'm sitting with a girlfriend and he walks in and I grab her arm really tight and I go, oh my God, I owe him an amend and I cannot do it. I cannot get up. And she said, yeah, you're right. You can't do it. You have to bring God with you. And I was like, oh, yeah, I actually don't have the power to do much, especially in this amends process. And I was instructed to pray before every single phone call, every word, every God's word's not mine. God, write through me. God, speak through me. God, do this for me, because I, Agent X, don't have the power.
I can't do that resentment column without
God. Exactly.
I didn't have the courage to look at myself. I know I put that on paper and I have to own it. I need that from God.
Yeah. And in being a sponsor, you are gifted this little grace and spiritual permission to show someone God. And it's not through, oh, but you're sweet and pretty. It's like through, but look at who you hurt, you know, look at yourself, look at these wrongs, so that we can bring this stuff to God and maybe be free of it and build different solid foundations with people in our lives that are no longer based on self-seeking and fear and selfishness and dishonesty and inconsideration and judgment and me just sucking. So that we can do better in life. AA for me is absolutely the solution to suffering, not just alcohol. And it sounds like that's for you too. Thank you so much, Captain Crunch, for coming on. That it goes so fast, I know. But then I always look at the clock. I'm like, oh, crap. We're all
done. I could have talked to you literally all day.
I know. I was like, we could do two
more. Who knows?
Thank you so much. It was so nice to meet you. And I'll call you and we'll come talk again, because that was just wonderful. And please remember, you can get in contact. That's on thebook@hotmail.com. Please come read the book with me. We'll talk to you again soon.
What is it? Is it? Oh, you have a book?
No, that's an email.
Oh, I thought you were saying you wrote a book.
This is enough of me. The world needs. Thank you. See you next week.